Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I asked for a new boob because I breastfed your sister and your brother, and you guys dragged my breast to the mud.
So I want to have a boob job. You know what? You all are gonna pay for it.
So much is happening right now in the world. Your breasts are at the bottom of my list.
Welcome back to another episode of Everyone's Business But Mine with me, Kara Berry, our Friday Housewives edition. I feel like this is the last time I'm going to be talking about Potomac and Salt Lake for the year. Yeah, I think it is. Because next Friday, instead of our regularly scheduled Housewives, because they won't be airing, I'm going to be talking about the latest season of Real Housewives of Miami. Yeah, I think that's going to be a good time to talk about our girls. Ooh, it'll just be like a light chat, you know, just quickly go through the things that are going on. Maybe I'll get into them later. I really, honestly, like, you know, just between us, if they didn't drop on Thursdays, I would really probably replace Salt Lake with Miami, but I can't. Oh, duh. See, I should not, like, think these things through on mic, but here I am. You know, we're all in this together. It's fine. Maybe, definitely, actually, I'll probably put Miami in Monday's episode since Winter House is over. Ah, easy peasy. There you go. Let's get into what happened this week, starting with Potomac. Oh my God, by the way, I've already talked about this once this week, but Ashley and Luke keep hanging out with each other and I keep loving it more and more. I do. Again, like I said with Maya, don't know what they're doing. Don't know if this is real. Don't know if I'm on sure ground here, if I'm on like a solid, lake of ice, to put it in terms that Luke understands. I don't know, or if we're on shaky ground here, but I'm loving it. I'm really loving it. Every picture, I can't. And I hope you guys are on the ride. I feel like, you know, not to pat myself on the back, but I feel like I stand them pretty early and now people are hopping on the wave, but you know, that's fine. That's fine, because I need all our strongest soldiers to make this happen. I really do. Can you imagine? And Robin asked a question that we were all wondering. Okay, so is this your boyfriend or not? I don't think we've gotten a response from Ashley so far, but I will be checking Instagram periodically to see if there are any updates as we record. Fear not. So let's get into Potomac. This episode, great, but I have a lot of question marks around my head right now. You know, I just have so many questions. So we really start with Karen going over to Giselle's house. You know, we're going to look at the West Wing, all of the new developments, all of the grass that has been replacing the large tracts of dirt that we experienced last year when, you know, we had their reasonably shady live show in her front yard, in the dirt. in the dirt. So, things have improved, I guess. I just don't understand. Can we put something on the West Wing? You know, Giselle refers to her part of the home as the West Wing. A producer asked Karen if she could say anything nice at all about the house. And she's like, you know, I really like the chandelier in the entryway. Then she kind of sits there and she's like, God, I wish I had anything else to say that was nice. Jesus. Couldn't think of one. I just want her to like make the West Wing, to go back to my point, I want her to like put a different facade on the West Wing so that it makes sense. Like somebody said, was it Karen who said it looks like a Monopoly house tacked onto a real house? And that's exactly right. It looks wild. And I don't see why she doesn't see that. What are we doing here? Forget the outdoor movie theater. I mean, it's not, Maryland is cold most of the year anyway. Forget that. Put it, I mean, even stucco would be better. You know what it looks like? It looks like the first house that you moved into after you graduated college, or like maybe when you were 20, like maybe when you were a junior, and then it's like attached to your grandma's house. It just doesn't make sense to me. So they're catching up on, you know, post-Miami stuff, where Karen is with her friendship with Mia, which gives Giselle an opening to talk about Jacqueline and Mia's relationship and how Mia got tipsy, spilled the beans about Jacqueline fucking one of her ex-boyfriends. And now, because of this, in Giselle's mind, if there were past situations where Mia and Jacqueline, you know, between them, does that mean that it's currently happening now, and is Gordon involved? Karen's trying to hide. She's trying to hide behind one of her curls of her wig. She is not trying to hear this. And in a confessional, she gets it completely right. Mia, you open your mouth one too many times. You said it anything in front of Giselle. You fucked up, girl. And now you're going to have to do damage control because Giselle's going to tell everybody your whole business. Here's the first question mark. Why are we talking about any of this? Like, I'm of two minds, and I think we all are of this, right? One, all of the questions that Giselle was asking, Robin asking, do you guys get it on, a couple episodes ago, all of these are invasive questions. And doubly so from Giselle, who keeps her business very close to her chest, her probably, you know, fuchsia polyester adorned chest. And the fact that she gets like carte blanche to get all up into the dirty details of everybody. And also she makes these very weird conspiracy theories. Like, she was the one who said, did Wendy get her titties done because she's feeling insecure because Eddie cheated on her because it happened on like Reality Blurb, no shade. But like, she is the one who lets her mind go to these wild conclusions. And then she gets other people wrapped up into them. And now we're having these conversations as though what Giselle's saying makes sense. And it doesn't. Like, in the real world, if your friend was like, yo, I heard you hooked up with your friend 10 years ago, 15 years ago. Are you guys still doing it? And is she fucking your husband? What? That's a weird question. Like, I would never ask my friend that. Like, that's not normal. Like, on what planet does Giselle deserve this information? And also, you just, like, made shit up out of thin air. It's wild. But, okay, my other mind, and I think we're all of the other mind here, that Mia and Jacqueline keep towing the line and making it seem like something's going on with them and being very elusive and, oh, I don't know. Every time somebody asks a question, they just don't want to say yes or no. And so it's fair to have people wonder, I guess, but it's also technically not their business. Not that I, host of Everyone's Business But Mine, should be talking about, you know, when we should or should not have scruples, I guess. But I feel pretty entitled in this one. So then we cut to Wendy, who is at the hospital. It's 5 o'clock in the morning. Apparently she has a 9-centimeter large kidney stone that clearly cannot be passed naturally through the body. So she has to get it surgically removed. I don't know from this. Okay, like, I've never broken a bone. I've never had to be in the hospital. This is wild. Like, it sounds so painful. I can't imagine that just, like, what is it doing? Just floating there in your body? In the kidney? And, it just seems so painful. Like, I've seen pictures of them, and they look so scary. And it's really the only time I feel bad for men, because how is that coming out of your dick, bro? Ooh. So, yeah, it seems like a very scary situation. But my question is, at what point are we taking her Christian Dior purse? Because they were wheeling her into the OR, and it was just sitting there. I'm like, does she keep it? Does Eddie take it? What's the protocol with the Christian Dior purse? Do you get to keep it if it's luxury? Like, as if it was like a... Never mind. Ashley's only real segment by her own this episode was, I don't know, her nanny and Dean go over to Concrete City, and she announces that Michael has found her a house. It's 5 bedrooms, big backyard. She's going to check it out. And her dumbass, excuse me, like, you know, and I was just like praising her relationship, right? But her dumbass says, I don't really know what the protocol is. Like, Michael and I are so financially intertwined with each other. So if he finds me this house, does it mean that he gets to spend the night there as a thank you? No. Was your daddy spending the night with Shirley? No, he wasn't. What a question. Giselle and Robin go to the venue a couple days before their first actual, not in the dirt, reasonably shady live show, and they're going through the numbers. And I love this. I love this. A few of you guys over the years asked me if I would ever do a live show. Now seeing this episode, no. That's going to be a no for me, dog, because if I saw all those empty seats, like, I just feel like, I don't know. I don't have much of an ego, but whatever is left of it, I think would be easily crushed by seeing, you know, the scarcity of people in the audience that night. But, you know, God bless them for trying, truly. At that point, as they're doing a walkthrough, they need to sell about 89 more tickets. Robin says because they don't have any sponsors or anything like that, they're all in, she and Giselle, 10 grand into this situation. I don't have 10 grand to put into a venue. What? Do you have to do that? 10,000? Oh, no. Somehow Robin has managed to wrangle Juan to go on stage. First of all, to go to the event at all on camera, and also to go on stage and speak into a microphone. Miracles, they never cease, and we all need to be reminded of that. However, he does try to wriggle his way out of it, because Robin's like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, he is coming, but he also did say, like, is that still happening? So I think he's coming, though. Don't worry about it. So everybody's got questions about if, or specifically when, this wedding is happening. So Giselle says, you know, listen, my feelings were a little hurt finding out that I wasn't invited to your wedding. However, ironically enough, I just happen to have my calendar app open. So if you've changed your mind at the last minute, you know, I'm free. So if you just want to give me a date, I can put it in there. Robin says more of the same. Same thing she's always been saying. Giselle says in a confessional, well, they've been engaged, what, 3 or 4 years now? It's been 2. The listeners, it's been 2 years, but, you know, nevertheless, her point is still right, that it's been a while, and what's going on, girl? What's going on? Robin says she needs to talk to Juan about the prenup, which we see a little bit later. Before that, Candace is in a full red Telfar outfit on the ground doing crunches, backstage for her Insecure music video. Dorothy's there. Miss Dorothy's watching her from the couch and goes, oh, are you getting in shape? Okay. Candace says in a confessional, listen, I want my mom to be there for me during all of my big moments, but howsoever, the lady has been instructed to sit down and mind her business. So we see a flashback from the drive back video shoot last year where she was talking cash shit about Chris's managerial skills or lack thereof, and, you know, just going in, having a real kiki with Mia about it. I love the, you know, behind the music style that we got footage of Candace of getting carried for onset onto a car. The full outfit, I loved. The Ariana Grande ponytail coming out of that Telfar hat, I loved it. It was a real moment. Are we doing cars in every one of Candace's music videos? That was just my question. It seems like we have a big car scene. There's a lot of mood lighting and some sort of classic car involved. I just need to know, is this part of the artistry? Is this part of the Candace, the deep space experience? I just need to know, because it seems to be a running theme in these videos. So my next question is, they put on the screen that there was a $25,000 budget provided by the record label for this music video. So, you know, we're not out in the parking lot at this point. We're on set. We got the whole thing going. We got a whole crew of people, and professional cameras, etc. Trina agrees to be in this video. So, how much did Trina make to appear in this video? Did she just do it for? She had to have done it for free, right? How is your budget $25,000, but you have Trina in the video? What is her appearance fee? Trina, know your worth, girl. Know your worth. Now, granted, and no shade to the baddest bitch. No shade to the Diamond Princess. It seemed like most of her moves in the music video was just, I'm going to look down and then look back up and then look down. And then maybe I'll, like, you know, run a finger through my ponytail as well. It wasn't much. I'm just saying, I just feel like, in terms of her legend status, I think she deserves 25 seems like what you would give Trina for this one scene, right? I just don't understand. But anyway, the video looked great. It looked really cute. The little scene that we saw looked super cute. And Candace says, hey, I want to be considered an actual musician. I don't want to just be considered another housewife making a beat, you know? I want it to be real. So I'm here for it. You know, I think we should all agree. Listen to one song if you haven't. And just be like, you know, go on to Spotify or whatever. Check out Deep Space. And be like, yeah, this is like an actual song. This is certainly no On Display. And we can say that for sure. It's for sure a more elevated experience than Simon Van Kempen's I'm Real. Do you remember yeah, look that up. That'll be a throwback for you. So then we head back to Robin's house. I swear, I thought I saw under the wand, it said Robin's fiance ? It didn't. But that's just what I thought I saw. My eyes were playing tricks on me. So Robin tries to broach the topic of, you know, the prenup, right? And getting married in general by saying, Giselle was asking me when we were getting married. Isn't that crazy? And I was like, didn't have an answer for her. That's wild, right? I hate what Juan said. I hate it. Juan says, well, just basically let me know what the date is. I already told you, Robin, like, this is all about you. This is your thing. I hate that. They do agree that they want the kids involved. And he was like, now that we're on the same page about. But bro, this is now your second wedding. Do you want to marry her or not? You know, like, I understand that these guys are like, oh, that's a woman's job to plan the wedding. But this is your second time around. Y'all are older. Seemingly, you guys are making more of a conscious choice to be together. And you've got a family now. It seems like you would want to be involved in that. Seems like you should want to at least be like, this is your day and this is your moment. Like, she's not 20. You know what I mean? Like, I would feel really insulted by that if I were Robin. But, you know, I'd probably be insulted by a lot of things that Juan does, but Robin doesn't seem to be. So then Robin, in another very roundabout way, says, oh, you know, I went to the lawyer and it came up. The question was posed, rather, about an infidelity clause. Like, the question was posed by you, Robin. That lady didn't say anything about an infidelity clause. Juan Dixon has the audacity to mumble under his breath, I don't think that's going to be an issue. Juan, isn't that the whole reason why y'all got divorced the first place? Because that was an issue. And quiet as it's kept, the streets stay talking about you having girlfriends and being very open about the fact that you and Robin are doing whatever you're doing, but it doesn't really affect your ability to be dating other people. So allegedly. So that's not going to be an issue. Mm-mm. Not when, how many seasons ago you were caught on a hot mic talking to a producer about how the only reason why you're with Robin is because of the kids. That's the only connection that you guys have. It's an issue, my guy. He tries to justify it by being like, oh, how long have I known you since we were 16, 17 years old? But again, bro, that didn't stop you then. Why would it stop you now? Bro. Okay, good not. Robin says, you know, you hear all these horror stories. I'm like, yeah, your own. American Horror Story, Dixon. And then Juan says, well, we're not these kind of people. But then Robin says in a confessional that the first time they got divorced, Juan had a girlfriend. At times, things got really contentious. But ultimately, the reason why it wasn't dramatic is because they ain't have no money left. And she can't imagine what it would have been like had there been actual money involved that they had to divide. So, I mean, fair. And, like, y'all are too old to be pussy popping around these subjects. Like, y'all need to really have a conversation. I'm hoping this is just for television and that real conversations are being had behind the scenes, but like, what we see is real concerning. Cause like, this is a conversation. Yeah, like, you shouldn't be marrying anybody who you're talking to like this, but like, if you are, you should be half of y'all's age, you know? Cause then there's a reason. But you've been through the fire with this man. He's been by your side in your life for over half of your life. You know him. And yet you still can't have these transparent conversations about your relationship. So then Robin tells Juan, you know, I'm not going to put anything in that, you know, prenup. I'm not going to put anything crazy in there. And he goes, no, I don't know that. What are we doing, guys? Let's really think about this. I know they got that marriage license not too long ago, and you only have so long to sit on that. I have a feeling we're going to get some sort of New Year's announcement. That's my vibe. Or like Christmas. They're going to do something like that. They're like, oh, we went to the Bahamas and we got married. In just the four of us. And that's like, that's cute for y'all. But I hope that they've had some actual conversations. Moving on. After that, we see Wendy. She's recovered from not one, but two surgeries that she's had to have in the past week, looking better than I do on my best try, on my best day. She got the Chanel earrings, the little cute little jumpsuit. Oh, she looked so, so cute. And her mom's trying to help her, just doing the very mom thing. You know, I love, like, you know, as I'm getting older, my mom's getting older, and I have to embrace the fact that, like, sometimes she annoys the shit out of me. And that's love. And that's really love. So when I'm watching Wendy's mom ask her if she wants a pork chop and a glass of red wine after she's straight out of surgery, you got to cherish those moments, you know? Then they have a conversation about how they've gotten into a cycle of working too hard. Wendy's mom was working too hard. She just went to the hospital. They told her, you need to, you know, chill out. You don't have any real health issues, but you're stressing yourself out. You're running yourself too thin and you need to calm down. Same thing that they told Wendy. Wendy's been avoiding pushing this baby of a kidney stone out of her because waiting till the next speaking engagement, the next this, the next that. And then here she is in the hospital at 5 o'clock in the morning, and how she's got Cameron and she doesn't want Cameron to continue the cycle of working too hard, working herself to the bone. Now I noticed, this is no shade to Cameron, that little Cam Cam, as cute as she is, was trying to help mommy have some chicken noodle soup and then end up eating that whole bowl by herself. And I just feel like, you know, for what it's worth, Cameron seems like she's looking for a softer life. And God bless her for it. Me too. Then Wendy's mom makes a big shift about how part of her leaning into relaxing more is that she wants new boob. Okay? So that I want new boob and you're paying for it. And I want it now. You, your sister, your brother sucked me dry. And I'm not taking it anymore. Wendy shuts that down, right? She's like, I'm not worried about your breasts right now, Rom. Like, I'm working off this milk of amnesia. We'll talk about it later or never. Then Karen goes over to Mia's house and she tells her, I told you that I was always going to keep it transparent with you. So I just want to let you know that Giselle was all too happy to tell me about y'all being in the shower, you and Jacqueline taking a shower together. So she goes, okay, so do you and Jacqueline shower together? That's like something you enjoy? And Mia kind of squints at her and she goes, I guess. Then Mia says, in the interest of full transparency, she and Jacqueline have done weird promiscuous stuff when they were kids. And Karen says, okay, so you were lovers? And Mia goes, no. Did you kiss? No. Was there fondling? Yeah, a little bit. You know, I thought I might be a gynecologist one day, so I did a little check of a cervix and, you know, I put a flashlight down there. What? How old were you? 19 or 20? Okay. All right, well. She's like, okay, well, Giselle also told me that you and G like to have sex with other people or something. And Mia's like, yeah, absolutely. But Karen says, was one of those people Peter? And now we said it. Mia says, I was actually Peter's girlfriend. Karen, okay, I get it. Because when we were in Miami and Wendy was saying, oh, you guys fuck Peter, something about that felt real personal. And now it's making a whole lot of sense. So we determine that not only did G and Mia hook up with Peter's girlfriend, they were actually with her first. And so Karen says, okay, gotta go. I have work to do or something. Bye. Finally, it's time for the Reasonably Shady live show. Ashley shows up. Charisse also happens to be there. Karen and Ray show up. And there's a step and repeat with Giselle and Robin's faces on it, right? From their podcast logo. And Karen says to Ray, take a picture of me in front of this. One, because Giselle won't take a picture with me otherwise. And two, I want to prove to everybody that I was actually supporting her. But then they get into the venue. They sit down in their seats. And Karen goes, Ray, the seats are empty. And Ray goes, well, let's give him a minute. She's like, the show's going to start in 9 minutes. What's going on? So then she goes, you know what? Since Robin wants to record everything, I'm going to pull my phone out too and record this. And she just pans to the empty, empty seats. God bless. God bless. So earlier when they were doing the walkthrough, they mentioned how they had sold like 120 VIP seats and tickets rather. They were going to be sitting in the first four rows. And I felt like we maybe got, seven rows, and it was sparse. So Karen says in a confessional, honestly, this is like a pretty good deal for those who got the VIP seats, because you got like 5 or 10 seats for every ticket that you bought. Very comfortable. Real good. At one point, Karen asks Ashley if Candace was planning on coming. And so we hear from Candace in a confessional who says, the reason why I'm not coming is because Giselle doesn't deserve any support of any kind. So that's it. Bye, Candace. The comedian announces, ladies and gentlemen, Robin Bryant. And then everybody's like, bro, are you fucking serious? And then he has to joke his way out of it by saying that he had a girlfriend named Robin Bryant, and that's why he got confused. So Karen pulls out a full notebook and pen and says, you know what? I've got some notes for my own show. First of all, no drunk hosts. Secondly, have them remember your name. Juan goes up for his segment, and the question is it reasonable or is it shady for the early riser in your couple, in your partnership, to get out the mini vacuum while you're sleeping? And Juan has to ask the question, what are we defining early rising as? Is it 6:30 or is it 11? Robin, how about that? Now, you walked your sleepy ass right into that one, Robin. What, girl?
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
At one point, Robin's mic doesn't work. That's another note for Karen's show. There's a whole segment in which Ashley and audience participants have to do a series of TikTok dances, which seemed to take up a long time. It seemed like Giselle thought that all of the dances were the same dance. Just a lot of arm movements. A lot of like running in place seemed to be happening with Giselle. So that would be it. Number four. No dances. No boring dances. They get to the audience question portion. And of course, Robin, did you not consider that somebody was going to ask you, when the hell are you getting married? And she has to sit there looking dumb and being like, oh, well, stay tuned. Yeah, well, I guess we all will be. Who cares? That's in a confessional. That was a great question. We've all been waiting 7 years, not just me. All of us. Now, even though that place was definitely, definitively sparsely attended, Robin says that they banked $14,000. They profited $14,000 off of that show. How much were those tickets? Merch? Were they making money off of, like, drinks and beverages? Concession stand? They must have been. Good for them. I mean, listen. Actually, maybe I'm changing my tune. If I could have a small amount of people go, should actually be ideal for me, and still make a lick off of that. Actually, maybe I will do a live show. So in our final scene, we have this showdown, or this interrogation, really, from Giselle to Jacqueline. Jacqueline and her curl. I'm going to need Jacqueline, much like Robin Brown from Sister Wives, to find a different way to curl, comb it out, finger our way through it, through the hair. The tightest curls, girl. And what are we doing? She looks like fucking Nelly from Home on the Prairie, Little House on the Prairie. I shouldn't even know that reference. And yet the resemblance is uncanny. So Giselle has Jacqueline sit down. Charisse is, over their shoulders trying to pay attention and get a word in edgewise, as she's been doing all season. So Giselle says, you know, what tripped me up, Jacqueline, is I had this conversation with Mia, and Mia says, if I'm winning, you're winning, and if you have a Porsche, you know, if Jacqueline's not riding around in a Porsche, then I'm not winning. So did Mia buy your Porsche? Do you see what I mean about these leaps that Giselle takes? But of course, Charisse's Eeyore ass has to be like, yeah, well, I actually thought that she was implying that she bought your Porsche too. And also, at first, like, what? And also, this is not your business. So, okay, if she bought the Porsche, then what does that mean? Like, what is that? Does that move the needle? What does it matter to you? So Giselle then asked Jacqueline if she's ever been like, hey, pick me, when Mia was watching Gordon fuck some other woman. Like, let me tap in and be that other woman, right? Jacqueline gets this Cheshire Cat grin on her face, and she goes, well, you'll have to ask me that, because I don't spill that kind of tea. And this is why, like, people get weirded out, because you make these weird suggestions, you guys. And I'm wondering, is this something that Mia and Jacqueline decided to do to kind of be like, oh, let's just always keep them guessing? Or I'm just confused all around, frankly. So then we see a flashback of Mia talking about how really she likes to watch Gordon fuck. She likes to sit there in the corner, pop open a bottle of champagne, and she says it's like going to a concert versus watching a music video on television. I'm really having to, like, compartmentalize and not actually visualize Gordon when she's talking about it, and just consider Mia's husband as some amorphous being that I can't picture. Because I don't need to know any of this about Gordon. Not a thing. Not a single thing. Not the imagery. Not the thought that their imagery could emanate in my mind. None of it. Pass. So after this, all the ladies get together because Robin was talking to Mia by herself. So all the ladies are now together. Ashley comes in at some point and they talk, you know, the Porsche situation comes up again. And Mia's response to, did you buy Jacqueline a Porsche, is the Porsche is in her name. Which again makes it very vague and it seems like you did it. But Jacqueline says, no, I bought the Porsche with my own money. But just so you guys know, I think if Mia wanted to buy me a Porsche, she probably could. It's like, okay, well, nobody cares about that. Giselle says, actually, I thought that maybe this whole time Gordon was the one who bought you the Porsche. And Mia says, why are we talking about Gordon's money? Gordon doesn't have any money. Oops. Did y'all see the way Robin's sitting behind Mia at this point. Robin looks right at the camera and just starts laughing. This is why Mia needs to shut her ass up, because she was probably right about that. And now that I'm thinking about, now that I have to think about her sitting in the corner, she's probably like, this is great for me, right? Like, because then I don't have to do it. And I can just watch him do it with somebody else. Because there's no way she cares about having sex with Gordon. Like, you can't tell me that. She likes to watch because then she doesn't have to participate. Giselle then asks Mia about whether or not Gordon has fucked Jacqueline. And she's like, what? And Giselle goes, well, Jacqueline told me to ask you. So then Mia says, well, Jacqueline and I need to compare notes. And Mia says in a confessional, just what I said, Giselle likes to get into everybody's business so that she doesn't have, you know, everyone's business but mine, so that she doesn't have to get into her own stuff. We don't have to open the book of Pastor Holy Whore again. So now we're talking about, you know, whether or not you guys are sisters. That's how she does it. So Jacqueline finally is like, I feel like this is not a conversation that we all need to be having together. But Cherise says, well, you know, if somebody asked me if I was sleeping with Juan Dixon, I would say absolutely not. And I was like, girl, you wouldn't have to. Nobody would ask that. Not even in the world of comparison would anybody think that that's possible. So Giselle decides to change the goalposts, move the goalposts again, and say, well, if you like to watch, then why doesn't Jacqueline get to do it? And Jacqueline has to say, okay, for the record, I'm not attracted to Gordon. Not that anybody's asked me that, but like, he's just really not my type. And so Cherise goes, okay, but what if he was? Then would you want to have sex with him? And Mia, would you be okay with that? And Mia says, this is a strange question, which it is. So Giselle says in a confessional, there's something strange to this. And how many showers do you have to take to get a car? It's like, girl, we already addressed the fact that Jacqueline, see, this is that messy shit that Giselle does that's not cool. Like, it's kind of funny, but it's not cool. And they need to stop giving her ammo because she will take it all the time, every single time. Goofy. Oh, okay, let's move on to something.
Oh my God.
What the happened?
Oh my God. And what happened?
What happened?
All right, guys, we're going to talk about Salt Lake City real quick. I know I promised last week that I was just going to hit some beats, but this week I really am. A, because I'm trying to cruise into the holidays, you know, you feel me? And also, I feel like we're all having a collective fatigue with Salt Lake City. So I think just to talk about the most important things is the best way to go about this. Y'all, doesn't it feel like we've been in San Diego? Like, we might as well just call this the Real Housewives of San Diego at this point. It's only on day three, and yet it feels like we've been there for months at this point. Wow. Meredith and Jen are both stumbling around the house like zombies, like a Thriller video. And Jen has this portable fan. It's like a whole moment. Then we get the text from Heather. She's in her casita. First, she texts Jen to come over. It's urgent. It's important, right? She shows Jen her eye. Jen's like, what the fuck? She gets up. Can I touch it? And she asked her what happened. Heather's like, I don't know. So then Joan notices all these like red marks, looks like scratches all up and down Heather's arm, her right arm, right? And they're trying to figure out, is that lipstick? No, there's scratches. No, I think it might be lipstick. Heather's already trying to cover for something. So she says, I don't want to get anybody in trouble. So that's why I need you to help me figure out what happened last night. So Jen says, okay, bet. Like, I'm picking up what you're putting down right now. What about we just tell people that your eye is a deep purple because a spider got into it and laid eggs? Now Heather says, why would you have to say that? Like, why do we have to, I'm trying to help a situation here. And now I'm thinking about a spider's laying eggs in my eye. So then Heather says, we need a good cover story because I don't want any of the ladies to get in trouble. So they just both agree. We don't know what happened. Total amnesia. So then Heather texts Meredith. She comes over. They show her Heather's eye. And she goes, is it obvious? Bitch, are you serious? It looks like Grimace, the big purple thing from McDonald's, is trying to birth himself outside of Heather's, like, through her eyelid. Is it obvious? What are you talking about? Meredith is horrified. We get a flashback of what happened in the casita. Who was in and out? Like we saw last week, 450. Not only does Jen come over, but it's also Meredith and Angie K. They're kicking it in the casita, having a good time. She leaves, or they all leave. She lets them out. And that's all we see after that. So Meredith is like starting to notice the scratches too. She's like, do you have scratches on your back? What happened? Did you fall or something? And Heather starts whispering, I don't want to talk about it. So Meredith is like, okay, this really seeming like Heather was physically battered. What the hell's going on? But Heather maintains, I don't recall. I don't know what happened. So then Lisa and Whitney are still forging their relationship. Lisa goes over to Whitney's. I love that she was using a Trixie Mattel Cosmetics mirror to put her makeup on. And so Whitney's like trying to have a heart to heart with Lisa. And this situation keeps happening with Lisa over the season. Like, people keep talking about her in a negative way around her. Like, that conversation when everybody's like, yeah, I remember when everybody was saying that Lisa was busting it wide open for Utah Jazz tickets. Remember that? And everybody was saying she was a whore and she was a slut. She was cheating on her husband. And Lisa had to be like, I'm here. I'm listening to it. We all know the story. We don't have to keep repeating it. Like, we got it. I don't love it. And I think we all know at this point. Thank you. So Whitney says, you know how everybody feels like you're the puppet master? And Lisa has to be like, uh-huh. Yeah, that's funny. Mm-hmm. I do know that. So Whitney's like, you know, I feel like actually Heather's trying to be the puppet master. I feel like she's doing all these dirty, dastardly deeds behind the scenes. And Whitney says, she turns the subject to Meredith. She's like, I honestly feel like Meredith tries to trick me. She tries to trick everybody by alluding to something and then having somebody else pick up that bone, deliver the message to whoever it needs to be delivered to, and then Meredith gets to keep her hands clean. Now Lisa's getting activated because Whitney is activating her about Meredith and saying, you know, I just feel like Meredith is relentless. If she's not happy, unless I'm going to be in the corner trying to end it all. Like, it's nothing's enough for her. So essentially, these are our two main storylines for the episode. What the fuck, Heather? Like, I feel like we all kind of feel this way. Allegedly, it seems very much like Jen did this, and Heather doesn't want to talk about it. I think Whitney got that completely correct. She's like, listen, they have a very toxic relationship. They drink a lot. They were together that night. Maybe something happened and they just decided, hey, for the sake of the fact that you have a trial coming up, Jen, you don't need to be looking any worse in the eyes of public opinion, the court of public opinion, and then the actual court of the state Southern District of New York. So I'm just going to keep my mouth shut. Because when she's having this conversation with Jen, initially, after she texts her and comes over, why is she like, we collectively need to come up with a plan to throw people off the scent here? Why does she, like, why would she need to be in it? You feel like, I kind of feel like if somebody came up to me with a bruise, like my best friend, and was like, we need to figure out how to do it. Why? Because if I didn't do it, why am I just like all in on this plan? I would need to know what happened to you, ma'am. What happened? So then all the ladies are getting ready to go out for the day. Heather comes with another set of Elton John sized sunglasses and shows what happened to her face to, who's there? Angie Kay, Dana, Whitney, and Lisa. They're all horrified. All of them are horrified. Because Lisa made mention earlier about the fact that she almost died. She had a near-death experience because Jen came into her room, titties out, and almost choked her. Choked the life out of her. And the Diet Coke. And Whitney's like, but wait, I heard a lot of commotion last night, but how come nobody almost killed me with their titties? And so at that point, Heather says, I think we all know what happened. And they're all looking at her like, what are you talking about? So she takes her sunglasses off and they're like, what is going on? Everybody's confused. So in a confessional, a producer asks Heather, how do you explain this? And Heather goes, well, what does it look like? I'm just going to shut down and I don't want to talk about it. So then she tells him, I don't know what happened. Like, she's saying this to Lisa and Whitney. And Lisa brings up a great point of, do you have amnesia? Because 15 seconds ago, you just said to all of us, we all know what happened. And now you're saying you don't know how this happened. Can't be both, girl. Whitney is perturbed. I think that's really the only word for it. And she's like, I don't get this. I'm very weirded out by this whole situation. For Heather to be sitting here and laughing and making it pretty obvious that somebody hit her. Like, she's really alluding to the fact that somebody hit her. It's making me physically sick. Because either somebody hit you and you're covering for them, or you did this to yourself and you want to act like somebody abused you. Both of those are pretty fucked up. Whitney's so aggravated by the concept of this in the confessional. She's like, that's not funny, Heather. If somebody did this to her in this group, that's not okay. The ladies go on something called a go-car. And I did think it was funny that Heather decides to pair up with Lisa because they have to go to, it's a two-seater. She's like, I'm going to get with Lisa because I know that all the rest of these bitches are going to ask me questions about what happened to my eye. But Lisa, she's going to talk about herself to the point where she's not even going to remember I'm there. I'm going to be great. And she was right. She was absolutely right. Lisa told an incredibly fascinating story. Are you guys ready about this? I bought a dress and it was $800 and John asked me how much it was and I said $800 and he said that it looked like it cost $80.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Great. Thank you. I also love how much information we're getting about Lisa's childhood, because the more she talks about it, the more and less sense it makes, if that makes sense. She says she goes roller skating with Whitney and Dana, and she says every weekend in 6th and 7th grade, she used to go roller skating. She was like the queen of the roller skating, the skating rink, did all the tricks. She's like having a great time. I mean, you could really see a 12-year-old Lisa on those roller skates having the time of her life. I don't get her, and yet I do. The rest of the ladies go for winery. Heather finally says it. Finally. Can I get a meal that requires actual utensils? Everything we've been eating this season has been on a board, a little rolled up cheese, and cold meat. Can I eat an actual hot meal, please? Meredith tries to pin Heather down about her eye again. She doesn't want to do it. Slippery, slick willy, right? Then she tries to get all, like, metaphoric and weird, mafia-style, cowboy-style in the confessional. It's like, I'm not going to spew my theories until everybody spews theirs. And that's the game in all of this. I can't say anything. It's like a game of Texas Hold'em, and nobody's going to show their cards. What are you talking about, ma'am? What are you talking about? Heather goes on about how she would have normally called Whitney after her mysterious injury, but she found out that they were on a friendship break, so she had to call Meredith and Jen instead. So Jen says, you know, then it goes back to Heather has this hang up about Lisa's friendship with Whitney, or rather Whitney's attempt at a friendship with Lisa. And I don't know why it bothers her so much, but it's like, baby, your slip is showing, and it's giving hater. It really is. And it's getting weird. It's like, okay. She feels like Whitney is trying to throw Heather under the bus in order to be friends with Lisa, which I don't feel. I do feel like Whitney probably always wanted to be friends with Lisa, but due to her loyalty with Heather, she felt like she couldn't. I do feel that way. But I also feel like I don't know if that's exactly what's happening now. I think Whitney just feels like you're a bad friend to her, and she's like, well, I'm going to use this opportunity to form a friendship with Lisa. I don't really think it's like as sinister as Heather is trying to make it out to be. But Jen decides to get real messy. She's like, well, I feel like maybe Lisa and Whitney are friends, or they're forming a friendship and a bond because they're both going through things right now. You know, Justin lost his job and Lisa has that SEC filing against her. Okay. I guess. I mean, you also have some things going. Never mind. So Jen goes in on Lisa. She's like, you purported yourself to be the richest bitch in this whole group. So why are you filing for some $25,000 crowdfunding grant? Because when you file for that kind of stuff, you have to disclose all your shit, which, you know, I could understand why Jen would know that that's maybe not the best idea. Because the gag is, I'm sure, like, quiet as kept, Jen probably tried to do this with her own thing, and then she was like, let me make a U-turn, because I'm going to have to be honest on these filings, and I can't do that, can I? Lisa finds out everybody's been talking about this filing because Dana decides to tell her that Meredith had mentioned this, like, a week ago, or a few days ago. Lisa's pissed. She's like, in a confessional, this is bullshit. Meredith is upset because of the hot mic moment, and now she's retaliating. She's trying to disparage my name, my business, my family. I'm sorry, my businesses aren't failing, they're thriving. So then Lisa explains that the filing wasn't about Vita. It was about a different company that has, like, one outlet that they own that's nationwide. I don't know what the fuck she was talking about, but then she's like, listen, I can pull my receipts and all of my POs, and I would think that Miss Meredith Marks would probably have to sell a lot of jewelry to even hit one of the ones that I have. So, top that. And then Lisa says, Meredith is always talking about how her family, her business, my man, my money, my mansion are all off limits, but Meredith just came for all of mine. So, you know what? Maybe things aren't off limits anymore. You know what? Meredith said I had mental health issues. Okay. Oh my God. I'm not the one who pops pills, bitch. You are. Oh, and score number two, 2 points up on the board for Miss Barlow. Meredith is still talking cash shit about Lisa in the Sprinter on the way back to the house about how much work it is to file this particular filing and how she can't imagine. This is some rich people shade. I can't imagine having to do all that work at this point unless I really had to. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me. You know, and you have to be really open about your financial situation too. Gosh, it's just like a lot of work. Unless you really, really need that money, it seems like not even worth it. Like, $25,000 is nothing to me, but Lisa must have desperately needed it. But then Meredith does her classic shit, and this is, I feel like, the stuff why people don't like her, is that Angie asks Meredith, okay, Lisa, maybe, or Meredith, do you feel comfortable talking to Lisa maybe one-on-one about this filing? And Meredith's like, oh, I don't care. Like, I have no skin in this game. We were just chatting. All right, let me wrap this up real quick. Okay, so Angie K, when they get back to the house, ends up telling Lisa what everybody was talking about with regard to her money. So now Lisa's really pissed off. Also, they're having a Greek goddess themed dinner, and everybody seems like already knew, like Drag Race rules, that they were supposed to come prepared with a costume. So everybody has one. Somehow, Heather manages to get herself an evil eye eye patch for herself. I believe they asked her how the hell she managed to do that in a matter of hours. And she said that Jen actually had packed an eye patch and that her team just happened to make one with an evil eye on it. Just whip one up for her. This is weird. This is a very strange situation. But you know what? Heather was new to just be like, oh, Jen had it packed in her luggage. Because they're like, yeah, that makes sense. It does seem like Jen would just pack an eye patch just in case. And also, apparently, beads. Enough beads to make an evil eye. How did they do that? Anyway, Angie K gets the quote of the episode by saying in a confessional that Heather and Meredith have both experienced Jen's toxic behavior, but now they're supporting it. She goes, we know Meredith loves her feathers. Birds of a feather flock together, but they're not pretty birds. They're seagulls. And everybody hates seagulls because they shit on people. Also, Lisa said she was dressed up like Helen of Troy. But was it like, I don't know what they call that print, but you know, it's like typically what they made for those old Chanel suits, like that print in a two-piece tube top with bell-bottom pants. Babe, when did Helen of Troy wear bell-bottom pants in 1332? What's happening? And Heather says, did she Google Britney and Justin at the Grammys on her way to Google Helen of Troy? Like, what happened? I love that Lisa gets away with doing whatever the hell she wants, especially with regard to her wardrobe, because she just acts like, this is what I'm doing. No, I'm selling it. This is the costume. But it's not. And she knows it's not. And she gives all the girls evil eye necklaces and tells them that if she doesn't see them wearing it, she'll unfollow them on Instagram. My God. Whitney decides to break the ice by asking who filed the SEC or who talked about it, who brought it up, right? And Lisa tries to call out Meredith, but Meredith's like, I just mentioned it in passing. And the only reason why everybody knows is because everybody was there for that singular conversation that I mentioned in passing days ago, and not also the conversation that we just had like 2 hours ago in the Sprinter. Not that. And not also the one before that, but it's okay. I'm just in passing. Lisa really starts to get pissed off. And Heather noticed it when she gets to the table. She's like, something weird's happening. I could tell Lisa's pissed. I just hope that I can see everything with this one eye I have, because it's going to be good. I can tell. So she was right. It was good. She starts imitating Meredith. Somehow, I guess in her mind, Meredith has an English accent. She's like, oh, darling, you're going to talk about my husband who doesn't have a job? How about that? You know? So they're going back and forth. And finally, Lisa looks over to Angie for backup. Like, hey, you're going to talk about this filing, right? So Heather goes, oh, Angie. So you're telling me that you ran to Lisa right after we got off that Sprinter to talk about what we said on that van. Real cool, Angie. Thank you. And then Heather says in a confessional, Angie, you're a dummy. Clearly you're trying to endear yourself to Lisa, but why would you bring up some embarrassing shit? She doesn't want to talk about that. Act like you didn't hear anything, girl. At some point, Meredith really starts getting activated about how Lisa, pointing her finger right at Lisa, you affected Seth's 4,000 employees when you talked about him not having a job. It's like, I don't know about all that, girl. In what way? How? How would saying Seth doesn't have a job be like, let's just close up shop here right now. Everybody else is fired because this woman with just a bra on is screaming about how this man doesn't have a job. That doesn't even make sense, Meredith. Like, what? Then Meredith gets mad at Lisa because Lisa claimed that Meredith was saying that she was mentally ill and how disgusting that is to make a claim like that. So we see the flashback in which Meredith tells Lisa, if you feel like the way you're behaving right now is normal and you don't want to seek out help, then there's really nothing I can do for you, Lisa. But if you do want help, I'm going to be here for you. And Lisa goes, what kind of help do you think I need? She's like, I don't know. I don't purport myself to be a doctor. I don't profess myself to be a doctor. Then Lisa starts to pull out her degree. And by her degree, I mean Meredith's degree on her. She's like, you're a lawyer, Meredith. I know you understand what intent means and how it means everything. Lisa's saying, I just did this one rant. It was just one thing. And you're like nailing me to the cross like Jesus was because of it. And Meredith says in a confessional that it's actually been a multitude of things over the years. Do you guys ready for this list? First of all, Lisa's been talking behind her back. Secondly, she did not call her as Meredith's father was dying and she knew it. And third, the most egregious seemingly of all, because she went into great detail, Lisa canceled Meredith's makeup artist for her at the 11th hour in the middle of a global pandemic. She had no other options. Do you know how awful that is? She actually says, that's absurd. Who does that? Okay. This is now the second time that somebody has claimed that Lisa has canceled a service for them behind their back. First was Angie H., with the caterers at that party she had. And now Meredith with this glam person. Okay. Very strange. It's the power she has. So essentially the episode ends back with Heather. The producers are trying to get anything out of Heather that they can regarding her eye. And a producer makes mention of, oh, Heather, you're saying that you don't remember what happened. She goes, I didn't say that. I didn't say that I don't remember at all. I never said that. It's just like the first rule of Fight Club. You just don't talk about it. So then Heather tells the ladies, listen, my advice to you is if you get a knock in the middle of the night at your door, just don't answer it. And she says she doesn't know what happened. So her producer asks Heather, who are you protecting? And she says, myself. I'm protecting myself. I mean, girl, I think just say Jen did it. I mean, we're going to find out. Well, you know what? I bet we're going to find out at that reunion, aren't we? Because Jen wasn't there. Since they pulled her invitation, I guess we'll find out. Oh my gosh, you guys. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you guys have a happy Hanukkah, have a happy Christmas, a happy holidays, or just a great weekend, a Monday off, a Friday off, hopefully both. And, you know, I'll check in with you Monday with a very special episode. I hope you tune in. It's going to be a two-parter. It's going to be this upcoming Monday and the next Monday. Gonna be a fun one, you guys. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thank me for speaking.